Productions. Recorded live.
You're listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to episode 58 of the Geocaching Podcast, where we cover the Geocaching Navigator. I'm XPunkX, and as co-host I have Daryl W4.
Daryl W4.
Hey, good to see you tonight. Hey, we're live. You can call in our show 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes can be found at geocachingpodcast.info, and we do have a voicemail number, which can be found at 206-350-3GPS. Hey, Daryl, it's good to have you back. It's good to be podcasting again this week. I'm glad that TalkShoe started to work for us about 10 minutes before we started the show. It was not letting us into the website, but it started working, and we're glad for that. I can't believe that this weather is turning so cold again here in the Midwest. Are we ever going to actually have summer? Jules came to me and said that she wanted to place a cache, a new cache in our series called Let's Go for a Walk. She said that there's a good place near where she grew up, and so we went out and placed the cache container. We're going to call it Let's Go for a Walk down Memory Lane, and we just actually reported it today, so be looking for that one if you're in the Indiana area. And this week has been really, really busy for me. It's only Tuesday, but it's been really, really busy for me. Daryl, what have you guys been up to?
Well, Saturday we took the boss and his wife and child out caching for the first time. Found three, didn't find one. But then we went out for 14 more finds that night, including a night cache, which is The Night Beckons You. A really amazing night cache. Definitely worthwhile doing if anyone's in the area. And then we hit another 13 on Sunday, including the state's oldest active letterbox hybrid, which actually doesn't have cords to the final. So we had to do it as a letterbox. Boy, we're not very good at that. Especially because the instructions had been written before some of the shrubbery had grown up a little bit further and kids had damaged some of the stuff in the park. So it was a little bit harder than we had expected. And then last night, an FTF on a new cache by Team Six Gun, which was placed at the REI store. Well, actually at the mall, which contains the local REI store. And, you know, we had just been at the REI store about 45 minutes before the publish. Yeah, how ridiculous is that?
How lucky are you?
We came back home. Yeah, we came back home.
Oh, man.
We had just settled in for the evening. I was going to get started writing up some notes for the show tonight. And then it published. So, of course, we had to run out.
Well, of course. Of course. You have to.
Well, it's like two and a half miles from the house, something like that.
You can't leave that one.
No, we just have to. But we did successfully get the FTF at about 8:30, so just before the sun started to set, you know. Very, very fun. And I actually received an email from him because he liked my log so much that I had done on that one. It was probably my wordiest log ever. I'll have to wait till I get the stats back from It's Not About the Numbers because I can't run my My finds pocket query for, I think it's another day or two. But boy, did I go crazy doing that one. That was fun. And, you know, oddly enough, while I was at work getting ready to take off tonight, he had another cache publish over there. So I ran over there with the BlackBerry because it's actually the only GPS I had with me today and tried to find that one with the Geocache Navigator. And it took me 20 minutes to find that. But not the fault of Geocache Navigator. I had the cache owner sitting over my shoulder laughing at me the whole time because, you know, some days you just shouldn't go looking for geocaches. This was one of those days. It's a fairly easy hide in a pine tree, but I swear I must have gone over it two or three times. I checked many of the pine trees around it, but I just was not getting it. It was really, really bad. But, you know, I spent an hour after that chatting with him in the parking lot. Someone else came up for the FTF. And, you know, to me, that's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's about those impromptu cash parties.
Oh, yeah, the first to find parties are just the best.
Don't forget to join us for the Cashers of the Roundtable 10 live this weekend right here on TalkShoe.
We're fast approaching the 8th anniversary of the original Stash and the first live Cashers of the Roundtable. We invite you to join us on May 3rd as we talk about what caching is to us.
We'll be recording through the TalkShoe service at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, but that's midnight GMT, or on May 4th at 10 a.m. Sydney, Australia. Sign on to TalkShoe at TalkShoe.com or call in at 724-444-7444 and select the TalkCast ID 7525 to listen and participate in the show.
Even if you can't join us live, we'd love to hear what caching means to you. Just call our voicemail line at 206-333-1206 and we'll use it on the show.
As always, visit the Cashers of the Roundtable website for more information at cashersroundtable.com.
Well, we also received a voicemail on the listener line, which is 206-350-3GPS from Spin Doc Bob of the GeoTalk podcast. And he called us about the watch list, but unfortunately the audio was a little bit too garbled to play. So in brief, his comments were that he likes to use that watch list function to let him know if anyone else has found the cache and to watch for the stories from those tougher caches.
Now, let's get on to our topic tonight, which is the Geocache Navigator. Daryl W4 and I have received reviewer units with BlackBerry units with the Trimble Outdoors suite loaded on them, which includes the Geocache Navigator program. We've had these units for about 4 weeks now, and we've had time to play with them, and we've really had a chance to get a feel for the software. But before we get into that, would you like to talk about what the Geocache Navigator is?
Oh, sure. Geocache Navigator is an application for GPS-enabled cell phones and smartphones, enabling it's going to be a long night, isn't it?
It is.
Enabling geocaching from your phone. Using the GPS, as wireless communications technologies go as well, Geocache Navigator downloads the locations of geocaches and then provides you a set of tools to find them. It's that all-in-one solution to use in the field without the need to pre-plan. All you have to do is pick up the phone and look for some caches.
Now, as of this show, though, there are only a few wireless carriers that are supporting this application. Some of them are Boost Mobile, Nextel, Southern Link Wireless, Sprint, and the BlackBerry phones through Handmark. The BlackBerry phones have to have the GPS. There's only certain BlackBerry phones that have those, but those phones can get it too. And it's only supported for some phones and BlackBerries. The supported phones include many of the Motorola iSeries, the Motorola Crazer, Razr, and Sliver, the LG 535 and 550, the Samsung A800 and A8800, many of the Sanyo models, and the Nokia Series 60 phones, including the N95, the N82, and the 6110. You can see the complete list and the up-to-date list at geocachenavigator.com.
In most cases, a carrier is going to bill you $5.99 for the Geocache Navigator itself, or $6.99 if you want the entire Trimble Outdoor suite, and that's billed usually right to your wireless bill. BlackBerry users can purchase a year subscription through Handmark, and Nokia 60 users can go download and install a free ad-driven version of the program. Before we get into the workings of the product, though, what were your thoughts on it?
Well, my thoughts were I thought it was good, and I really loved the ability to pull it out and see the caches that were right near me. I found out that in most cases that it was fairly accurate, and I'm going to really miss it when I have to send it back soon. And I might have to splurge a little bit and get it for my BlackBerry because I do have the Curve, the same unit that we have. So, what was your thoughts?
Well, I really did enjoy it as well. It's just so nice to be able to pick up a device, not have to go loading anything from the computer. You know, it's that whole convenience. It gives you the option to go caching on a whim just about anywhere. It's great for those FTF hunts. You know, all you need to do is grab the GC number, punch it in, and you're off. No loading, no printing, just hop in the car and drive. Where it really kind of worries me, though, is that it's not a device built for those rougher situations. You know, the BlackBerry is for much lighter use, not for outdoor use like we're used to with our GPSRs. And I kind of wonder if they're going to last. I don't want to go busting phones like crazy. I also want to warn listeners, though, that you do need a good data connection for the phone. And these phones that we have from Trimble are on the AT&T service, which in the Detroit area is known to be less than satisfactory. And I did have a number of times where I couldn't get maps to load or even the cache information.
Now, it seemed to work in my neck of the woods. The coverage seemed to be pretty good. So I really didn't have much problem getting that to go. I find that with my BlackBerry phone, which is on the AT&T service too, is I don't really have any problem with service. And so I didn't have problem with service here for the BlackBerry Geocache Navigator. Let's talk a little bit about how to use the Geocache Navigator while you're in the field.
Well, when you first open the application, you'll have several options, including quick caches, find caches, settings, and enter manually. That last option allows you to enter the coordinates manually for things like the multi-stage caches, while the quick caches simply returns a list of easy traditional caches within a couple of miles of your current location. Really, the best way to get started, though, is to choose the find caches option. Once you're in that menu, you'll have several more options. Near me, which you can configure your search for caches around the location you're presently at, one of the really great features of the Geocache Navigator. Near an intersection, which searches near a given intersection, you specify roads and whatnot. In a zip code, so that you can just punch in the zip code and do your search that way. By the cache code, and this is what I use for looking up those FTFs, I get the GC number right off the email notification that goes to my phone and punch that in there. Near location, which searches from a given set of coordinates. So it's really great that they have all of those different options in there, but let's talk about the near me option, because that's what I normally use, because that's what's going to return the caches that you want to find near you with the most configurability. And once you go into that, you have the configuration of how far away the caches are going to be, meaning, you know, do you want to see caches within a 2-mile range, 17-mile range? You know, what distance do you want to travel for a cache? How many caches? You don't want to go too much. There's no real limit, but it's one list, so about 20 is the most that I could manage before it just got to be too much work scrolling through that list. What types of caches? That's a list of checkboxes to enable or disable specific types of caches, like traditional or events. And then you just click the Find Me. All right, actually, I'm sorry, the Find Them, which executes the search. Yeah, I need some help finding myself tonight.
Find you. It's a GPS. It's going to find you. Well, after you press the Find Them button, not Find You, you're presented with a list of the caches. This list is sorted from the closest to the most distance listing the cache type icon on the left side, with the cache name following then the distance and the direction on the right. The distance and direction does update as you move, too. That makes it really handy when you're on the bus. Once you select the cache that you want to hunt, you're presented with four option tabs. Radar, which is a new concept for most of us. Think of it more like being zoomed out on a map screen of your GPSR without a map. Then there's a compass. This is the default view, and it displays your speed, heading, accuracy, and more. There's also a map tab, which displays the cache as a red dot and you as a red arrow. You have the option then to load maps that are the background. And then there's a details tab, which has the GC number, the name, the hider, the container, the difficulty, terrain, coordinates, description, and text. And it also has a display, an option that you can display hints and logs. The really cool thing about the logs here is that you can scroll back and forth through all the logs loaded up in batches of five. So you don't have just like the last four that you would if you loaded through GSAC or something. You can go back as far as you need. So that's the one cool thing about that.
Well, one of the best features of the software is that there's no maps to buy or install. You just download whatever maps you want to use on the fly in the field. Geocache Navigator has the option to download street maps, topo maps, or aerial photos. Unfortunately, though, the street maps don't provide the turn-by-turn routing, but it's a great reference and very helpful to find your way to the cache. With any of those maps loaded, you can use the keypad 2, 4, 6, and 8 to move around, or buttons 1 and 3 to zoom in or out. As you zoom in and out, or move around the map, you might have to reload the map, though, as it needs more detailed or different sections of the map, because it's only grabbing the bits that it needs at a time to make the best use of the memory available in the phone. Now, one of the big problems, though, is you can't zoom in as tight as you would with a GPSR, so that's when the radar view comes in handy.
Yes, it really does, and that screen is unique, and it's pretty cool, too. It takes some time to get to learn to use it, because it's something that we've never really seen before, but it's basically, you have this cache in the center of the radar view, and then there's a crosshair with two rings, the distance between the inner ring and the outer ring, and so you can kind of get judge the distance, and then you're displayed as the red arrow again. And in the top left corner, you have the distance from the cache. This view updates the scale automatically as your distance from the cache changes, but by watching the arrow, you get a chance to feel where you are in relative to the cache and your current direction and movement. I tend to glance at the screen, but not use it too much. I mostly use the map area, and that's probably mostly because I kind of do that on my GPS, too. I don't usually use the compass. I use more of the map. Daryl, how do you find caches at this tool?
Well, I mostly work in the map view, either with the street or the aerial photos, then switch to the radar view when I get really close to the cache. I love the topo maps on the 60CSX and Andres Colorado, but I find that the maps here, the topo maps on the Geocache Navigator, just don't really work that well because, for one, I can't get close enough to really use them. But I always start off with the cache description and read through the information there first to know what I'm looking for. Sometimes I'll read the first log or two to see if it's possibly been, you know, missing, muggled, whatever, before I try to make the attempt. I don't look back at the logs too far, and I don't check the hints, though, till I've searched and come up empty after my GeoSense fails, like tonight.
Well, of course, from there, you can mark the cache being found or not found, and then it'll send it to your field notes on geocaching.com. We've talked about accessing and logging these before, but this option does not give you any notes from the field. That all needs to be added when you log it back at your computer and you get on geocaching.com. This is one of the strengths and weaknesses of the product. You'll have to take notes on anything that you do. You have to have a great memory, which I just don't, or switch over to the phone's browser and log on the WAP. But Daryl, I understand that you've been working on a preview feature of the release, of a future release software.
Yeah, I am. I was given the updated version after I discovered a few issues in the software, and I can say that all of the problems that I found have been repaired, and there's been some significant feature upgrades as well. The most notable has been a complaint of many Geocache Navigator users, which is that, if you recall from Sunny and Sandy's talking about the product when they first got it, they didn't like seeing all those caches, including the ones that you had found in your results. Now, that had been the case on the previous version, the current version, I should say, actually, unless you searched through that Near Me option. And that way it would filter out anything that had been logged on GC, but not the ones that you marked as found in the phone. Well, the new version has an option to filter out those finds that you've logged in the phone and on the website as well. So it's very nice, and I'm really liking the new version. But one of the things to remember still, again, this is one of the strengths and weaknesses, is that Geocache Navigator is just the software, and some of the stuff really does depend on your hardware.
That's very true. We are using the BlackBerry Curve, which is the 8310, and it's on AT&T's service, which uses a good GPS chipset. So we've had a good experiences finding caches, much like when using the Garmin 60CSX or the 76CSX. The one issue, though, has been that we're running down the battery fairly quickly, and that's a common issue with GPS-enabled phones. So keep in mind that you'll either need to carry a spare battery or plan on charging the phone for a full day of caching. So why don't we wrap up this section with our overall impression? Daryl, what was your overall impression?
Well, before we do that, I just want to remind people that we'll be opening up for questions in a moment. So if anyone has anything they want to ask about it, you can go ahead and mark that you want to talk, or just go ahead and type it in. My take, though, is that this is a great alternative to a GPSR for people who travel. I'd love to take this with me as we head out to Geo Woodstock, since it would pretty much eliminate the need to haul out a laptop, find a network connection, and do all the setup there. I've been using it in place, actually, of the Palm with CacheMate, just for paperless caching, and still using my 60CSX. That combination really does seem to work very well for me. But the multis and unknowns still sometimes aren't as easy to work with in Geocache Navigator as I'd like, especially some of the features like projections don't seem to be available. And they probably will be eventually, but that's when having the 60CSX is still nice, because I have that option to go back and use that phone or use that device. But the real test is going to be whether I buy this service once I send it back. And the answer is, if I had a compatible phone, which I don't right now, I would absolutely be subscribing. Since my phone isn't supported, I'll have to wait till my contract's up in October. And you can bet at this point that this product is going to be a factor in selecting my next phone and carrier. It's going to be one of those things that's going to make or break my purchase decision, I'm sure. So come October, I'm sure I'll be walking out the door with something that supports Geocache Navigator. What are your thoughts, Andy?
Well, I really liked it, and I thought it was great while I was traveling. The one thing I really liked is I didn't need to run a PQ for the driving trip. I could just run a PQ if I wanted to use my Garmin. I could run just a pocket query for the area that I was going to be in, but I didn't need to run along the caching along a route. I could just pull it out when we were at the rest stop and see what caches are right near me. I don't think that I would give up my GPS just because it's more rugged and durable. So on that scale, I'm going to obviously keep my GPS. However, as a working person, it does allow me not to carry my GPS to work with me every day, just because in case there's an FTF to be hunted. I can pop up my work phone, which I already have on me, and I can just hunt out the FTF. Or if I'm in a meeting in a new town that I'm not necessarily going to know I'm going to be about or going to be there and have planned out, I can just pull it out. I have all the information. I'm debating now whether I want to get it for my phone. I do have the BlackBerry Curve on the AT&T network, so I could. I just don't know if it's worth it since I don't really do a whole lot of traveling a lot. I think it's a great program and it's a great idea, and I love it, and I would recommend it to people who travel a lot and work for work, or who don't want to spend the money on a standalone GPS and they already have the phone that supports this Geocache Navigator. So I would definitely give it two thumbs up. It's a great product. If you can do it, I would definitely do it. At least try it for a month if you're interested, because it's a program that's worth the $5.95 a month. Go ahead and do that. We are going to go ahead and open our phones now. So if you have any questions for us, since we did get a chance to do this, if you have any questions, go ahead and call us, 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. If you're already on the phone with us, go ahead and push the request to talk up in the right-hand corner, and we'll get you on. We want to hear from you. If you have any questions, or if you're just in the chat room, go ahead and type it, type your question. I see that we have a question from Ducks Unlimited, and the question is, what is the accuracy of it? I think that all depends on the phone that you have. With the BlackBerry Curve that we have, it was fairly accurate. I don't remember ever seeing, Daryl, is there an area in there for how accurate it thinks it is?
Yeah, there was under... Actually, I'm not 100% sure. This might only be on the new version that hasn't been released yet. But it did have an accuracy on the compass screen. But
oh, yeah,
that's
right.
That does depend very much on which device you're using it on. The curve that we were using on the AT&T service uses a different chipset than the CDMA version of the same device does, which is the one that like Verizon and Sprint use. And from everything that I've seen and heard, there is a difference in accuracy between those two. But it's just like any of the other GPSRs. You know, you take out any of the, we'll say, like eTrek series GPSs, and there's going to be a slight difference between the different models because you're using different chipsets. The same thing holds true for these, and it's, you know, a lot more different manufacturers, so there's going to be a lot more different error rates. But basically, think of this one, I'd say, being roughly like the new H-series eTreks as far as the performance goes, with the accuracy being about the same thing.
Now, and one thing that I had missed in it, because I really hadn't had the need to until I was looking more into it again today, I was talking earlier with Daryl, and I said, I wish there was a way that I could just put in some coordinates. Like, because a lot of times if you're at puzzle caches or unknown caches, you have to put in coordinates into your GPS to get to the next stage. And but I found that section I'm very happy with the Geocache Navigator. So that's just one thing to ease your guys' mind, that if you weren't sure about getting it because you didn't know if you could put in coordinates just on your own, you can do that. Any other questions?
We did have a comment from Candy. One of the nice things about being a girl is that she keeps her GPS in her purse at all times.
That would be nice. I don't carry a purse, so no. But when I do go to work, I keep my GPS a lot of times. I bring it in the car and then I bring it into the office. So I do usually keep mine with me, but it's one of those things that it's just another thing to carry along with me. And if I could just drop it for the phone, especially those times that I'm not really planning on going out caching, but you never know when the cache might pop up. So another question we had is, do they allow external SD cards? There's no way to put any of the information on the SD card in the current version. I mean, there is a mini SD card in the BlackBerry Curve, or there is the possibility of doing that, but there's no way to save data to that.
Yeah, the application downloads the information needed as needed. So it's that whole live, only grabbing as much as it needs at a time, so it doesn't have to manage all that stuff and, you know, gobble up space on the phone.
Any other questions before we go ahead and wrap up? All right. Well, if anyone has any other further questions about this between now and next week's show, or anything for that matter, they can go ahead and call our voicemail line, which is 206-350-3GPS. And we'll talk about it next time on the show, or play your voicemail. Remember to join us next Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525, or just sign on to TalkShoe.com, and you can be in our chat room with us too. Our show notes and links to all the past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. You can also call us 206-350-3GPS, and anytime you can do that, and leave us a voicemail. Daryl, one of the positive things before we close here real quick about joining us live on our show, because people might not understand why it's fun to join us on a show live. And one of the things that I like about the show is because after we stop recording, we continue to chat for sometimes 10, 15, 20 minutes about the topic, sometimes not the topic, but we continue to talk. And also, when you're live with us and you can have a chat, you're in our chat room, you can go ahead and chat, text questions to So that's, we would love to see you guys live. Make sure to join us next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks for joining us this week, and we will love to see you next week. Have a good week.